From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 23rd installment in our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the USSR. We're still stuck in 1905, having gone back to look at some of the political developments, including particularly the trends inside the revolution in Soviet Union. So we're talking about item two on the agenda list that we formulated about 3 weeks ago, Trotsky and Lenin, the years after 1905, looking at things like the Prague Conference, the Vienna Conference in 2012, these things. We don't know if we're going to reach that, but let's hop in. And by the way, Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, Don, and to your listeners.
Thank you.
Very well, we start a new year, but we're still exploring the question that you outlined. So who was Trotsky in the context of the Russian Revolution? Now, we have to understand that Trotsky is just a name. Trotsky is a person in a conflict within the Russian Social Democratic Party as it evolved towards 1917. Mm-hmm. What were his ideas and his tactics? Whom did he represent is far more important. What did Trotsky represent?
Right.
This is not the history of the person so much as the ideas and the tactics.
Right, it's history, not a biography, it's a history.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're not doing the great man of history.
That's right.
Of analysis. We're doing, Marxist analysis. So which class did he represent? Did he know it? Did he represent anything anyway? Let's not waste time.
And I got to just interject something here. In terms of the term man in history, looking at the condition of humanity at the moment, I would say that if we were working on the list of great men of history, we'd have a really short list and we would probably be done already. These social processes are much more complex, and it is exactly as you said, and further, not just, this is one human being in the midst of all these things happening inside Russia, right, but around the world, both in terms of the class war that was going on and also the various political and economic configurations that were driving history at the time. So, okay, let's jump in. I just wanted to add
absolutely.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to interject too. I mean, we are exploring the question, how do you get to socialism?
Mm.
How do you establish what are the first steps? What are the second steps? We are interested in that.
Yep, and there's no MapQuest that you can just type it in and say socialism as a destination and type in your address and here's the map. It's a little more complex.
Okay. All right. So we are still in the 1905 revolution, but what we're going to do is mention Lenin's analysis in 1906 of what failed and why it failed in the revolution in 1905.
Okay.
So what we have in 1905 is Petrograd in January 1905 and Moscow in December 1905. We have bookends. We have what happened in Petrograd, and we have what happened in Moscow. So that is the background.
Right.
So in Petrograd, on 7 January 1905, a single strike, which occurred in the Putilov factory, grew into a general strike. And by January 7th, a few days from now, 1905, there were 140,000 strikers in St. Petersburg. However, on Sunday, 9 January of 1905, a peaceful procession of citizens to the streets of Petrograd to the Winter Palace was led by Father Georgi Gapon, as we mentioned last time, to actually beseech the Tsar for food and relief from oppressive government, as though the Tsar was naive, as though the Tsar was detached from the abuses that were perpetrated on the people, as though the Tsar was the little father. Anyway, there they go. Ooh. Hold on just a second. I lost my note.
And it's like, essentially, I mean, a parallel to what happens today. You know, there are people that believe that the structures are just fine, that the foundational organization of society here is just fine, that there are corrupt players that are, you know, making a mess of things. And
the system works. It's just who's in charge of it.
Right.
It's what you said.
It's a personnel problem.
Yeah. So now what happened, as we know, is Bloody Sunday, at least 1,000 deaths, because the palace guard fired on the peaceful demonstration. And following these events, Trotsky arrived, secretly returned from New York via various misadventures to Russia. He returned in February 1905. And he became the chairman of the Council of Soviets in Petrograd, which was mainly Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries. He became the chairman, and he swiftly altered the party's agenda. Now, the positive look, you know, they call it a pragmatic leadership, because the general strike was immediately called off because the council, directed by Trotsky, the council of the Soviets, because, as we mentioned last time, it was feared that it would provide the imperial government with an excuse for greater oppression. So he poo-pooed, you know, the escalation of the challenge. The work of the council consisted then of the organization and coordination of strike action and supplies for the workers. Now, in Petrograd at this time, after Trotsky's arrival, the Soviet policies remained moderate, the most extreme actions being an appeal for its supporters to refuse to pay taxes and to withdraw their bank deposits. In other words, no escalation to an uprising. Now,
so legal reformism, really. I mean, it's within the...
Yes, right. Absolutely. And we see... Here I interject that there may be some people who say, why are we going back into history and exploring these factions? Should we just organize and start a revolution or something like that?
Yeah, right.
But this, you know, what happened in 1905 determined what happened in 1917. What happened in 1990 should determine how to organize the future resurgence of socialism. So if we don't know the history and the tangents and the ideas of the past, how can we learn from the errors?
Right. One of the problems that people have with this, however, is that they think when they look at a description of, say, an argument between two factions, that transplanted 100 years from now, they have to read from the script instead of understanding what happened before and applying the lessons to the contemporaneous situation or the contemporary situation.
Yes, that's right. It's a crude interpretation. Wow. You don't repeat history. You don't follow the script. You just understand what
happened. It's supposed to be science, not religion or dogma.
Yes, that's right. So we learn... So Lenin wrote Lessons of the Moscow Uprising because, as I said, in December, after a year of agitations, Moscow was ready to explode. Right. And there was the presence of Lenin in Moscow. So he wrote an appraisal in 1906, Lessons of the Moscow Uprising, and this is, sometimes I paraphrase and sometimes I quote. He says that the principal forms of the December movement in Moscow were indeed the peaceful strike and demonstration.
Right.
And these were the only forms of struggle in which the vast majority of Moscovites, of the workers particularly, took an active part. So we're in 1906, we're still talking proletarian and workers. Later on, of course, the 1917 revolution will be the revolution of peasants and workers.
Right.
So we have to remember that. But right now, these are the words. Majority of workers. And in Moscow, what do you have? You have workers, sure. So in this, he says, yet the December action in Moscow vividly demonstrated that the general strike as an independent and predominant form of struggle is, he says in the present, out of date. The December, so this trade unionism, he's referring to the economists, you know, the branch, the reformist branch of trade unionism in the economists in the Social Democratic Russian Party. Is out of date. This is out of date.
It didn't work.
That the movement is breaking out of these narrow bounds with elemental and irresistible force and giving rise to the highest form of struggle, an uprising.
Yep.
He's saying that in Moscow there was a possibility because Moscow wanted to go beyond the strike, the general strike. So he says, he continues, in calling the strike, all the revolutionary parties, all the Moscow unions recognized and even intuitively felt that it must inevitably grow into an uprising.
Right.
So the parties in charge, the Council of Soviets in Moscow, realized that this would escalate. So on December 6th, the Soviet of Workers' Deputies resolve, that is, democratically, to strive to transform the strike into an armed uprising. Actually, the people wanted this, the representatives of the people. As a matter of fact, Lenin says, none of the organization were prepared for this, the various parties. The Social Revolutionary Menshevik majority of the Joint Council was responsible for actually disorganizing its activity. During the days of the December armed uprising, the Joint Council lagged behind the revolutionary events and was incapable of acting as the operational general staff of the uprising. What is Lenin pointing out?
Lack of leadership, lack of a leadership cadre, lack of a party, lack of an organization.
Exactly. The thing that Trotsky and the Trotskyists and that branch fought and began to call simply the bureaucracy. Now, let's see what more Lenin says that is instructive. Now, he says, the organization, the Joint Council, majority, Menshevik, Social Revolutionary, failed to keep pace with the growth and range of the movement. The strike was growing into an uprising primarily as a result of the pressure of the objective condition created after October. He means October 2005.
October 1905.
Yes. And this is because the repression increased even more. A general strike could no longer take the government unawares.
Right, they were prepared for it.
It had already organized the forces of counter-revolution.
That's right.
And they were ready for military action. That's in right. other words, yep. what will happen in Vienna in 1931, 32. Mm-hmm. That is, yep. the more you agitate, the more you prepare the government to counter act. So you have to be prepared for
right.
for repression.
Or for, look, you're gonna, if okay. you're going to go into a war, if you're going to go into a confrontation, you have to have organization, a plan, you know, and a dynamic plan. In other words, I know yeah. we're going to move here. They're going to come at us either that way or that way. If they come at us that way, we have to have somebody here to do this and somebody there to do that. Oh, they need supplies. How do you do? I was speaking with a friend the other day who was a doctor in the Soviet military. Uh-huh. And part of her required training was to be an accomplished paratrooper. She had 250 jumps, she's telling me. Why? Well, I'm supposed to do field surgery. How do I get there? Am I going to take a taxi? And yeah. so they have to plan these things yeah. like this. And yeah. so, you know, if you're going to go into battle with the government as the people or whatever, you know, you don't just lumber down the street like you're in a zombie flick and overwhelm them with numbers. I mean, those make interesting pictures and sort of encouraging political commentary. But you need a plan. And you need a mechanism to implement the plan and correct it and adjust it, etc.
Exactly. And you can also see that the criticism by the bourgeois class, the establishment, is always that the Soviet Union had this centralized,
right.
This oppressive party, which, you know, it wasn't.
Right.
But they never acknowledge that they have all sorts of organizations. They have police, they have the army, they have the think tank, they have IMF, they have the World Bank. What the hell is that?
And they have the ownership class, by the way. Here, yeah. there are people that say that they own the piece of the earth that you're standing on right now. They don't didn't have that over there. So these people control everything. Your water,
right.
everything.
Yeah, you can't have anything more centralized.
Exactly.
Except that it's, you know, So, very important. And remember, we have to remember that 1905 is just a few years after he wrote What is to be Done.
Right.
That will, you know, What is to be Done? What is to be done is to have a vanguard of very well, not amateur revolutionaries, but very right. well prepared revolutionary, preferably from the working class,
right.
that will instruct, help people, workers, not to be mere amateurs, he uses that word, but to become professional revolutionaries, right. or at least class conscious themselves,
right.
that what they're fighting for. So right. he says then, that the organizations, the party, failed to keep pace with the growth and right. range of the movement. So the strike was growing into an uprising primarily as a result of the pressure of the objective conditions created after October, as I said before.
Right.
A general strike could no longer take the government unawares. This is so important.
Right.
It had already organized and the forces of counter-revolution, and they were ready for military action. So the whole course of the Russian Revolution after October, the 1905 revolution, and the sequence of events in Moscow in the December days, Lenin says, strikingly confirm one of Marx's profound propositions, which he presented in Class Struggles in France, 1848 to 1860. And it was this. Marx said, revolution progresses by giving rise to a strong and united counter-revolution.
Hmm.
It compels the enemy to resort to more and more extreme measures of defense. And in this way, devises ever more powerful means of attack. Now let's talk about, eventually I want to ask you about the Occupy movement, but
yeah.
but before that, let's define what he meant by this party, which in what is to be done emerges as a as political vanguardism.
Yeah, and you know, the, as far as the, well, maybe we can wait till next week on the Occupy stuff, because I'd really like to develop this further where we are right now. I just want to say, point out, what we're talking about here is he's talking about an a dialectic, an action and a reaction. You know, whatever happens, objective conditions propel people to commit acts. And so maybe you have reformist acts. They're going to have a general strike. They're going to do this. That in turn produces a response, and you know, from the government. The government is, you know, seeing its options set shrinking. It's going more and more to extreme reaction out of an existential, you know, sense of existential threat. That in turn puts on the agenda for the people that, okay, well, now they're getting extreme. We have to come up with new ways to deal with it for the next step. Yeah. And you have a tension that's set up where it's like a cycle of escalation.
That's right. So what do you choose? Guerrilla tactics? What do you choose? I mean, we know.
Right.
Right?
And when?
So,
and when?
Yes.
You know, do you choose guerrilla tactics the first time somebody gets tear gassed, or do you wait until the first time somebody gets shot, or do you wait until they raid your headquarters? You know, there are all different times when each of these actions are appropriate. If you leave too soon, there's no leadership for what's coming next. If you leave too late, the leadership is executed, know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, timing is everything.
That's right.
As what is it, Lear? Anyway. King Lear.
Yes.
Vladimir Lenin popularized political vanguardism. Well, he presented it. At first, in What is to be Done, he actually followed Karl Kautsky. And so he argues, because this comes in because eventually, between 1905 and 1914, Lenin realized the importance of the peasantry in exile. When we get to those years, we'll see how much he kept in touch with the movement in the agricultural places of Russia. Right now, he's still he's a student of Marx, and so this, it's the workers, and Marx thought that capitalism was weak and would fall by the end of the century.
Like,
it wasn't yet noted how the enormous power to revitalize itself, mainly through imperialism, which we had to wait for Lenin to explore,
right,
to present the idea of how capitalism renews itself.
Right.
Of so we're still, you know, in What is to be Done, and the vanguard party was to be. So he argued that Marxism is complex to learn, and that the hostility of the establishment, meaning the autocratic, semi-feudal state of Imperial Russia, not only is Marxism hard to comprehend, I mean, it has this science, this dialectical thinking, etc.
Right.
But the very objective conditions of Russia required a close-knit group of individuals pulled from the working class vanguard to safeguard the revolutionary ideology within the particular circumstances presented by the Tsarist regime at the time. In other words, if you want a revolution, you don't have just a club of like-minded people,
right,
of diverse opinions. You have to get a PhD in Marxism in the field, and you have to test it.
That's right.
And
that's
you
right.
have to, and in Germany, okay, maybe you could have an open party, but in Tsarist Russia, you had the Okhrana, which suppressed every political association possible. You had to act under in the basement. So anyway, he says, in this matter of the vanguard party, you know, Lenin was always very democratic in the sense of inclusion, but there are certain conditions that make this inclusion impossible and dangerous. So while he wished for a revolutionary organization that was like the contemporary Social Democratic Party in Germany, this is before 1914, before the betrayal of the of the German Democratic Party, and, right. and he'll change his mind in 1921, and he will toss the Menshevik out and tell them to go to Berlin. So he would like a party like the Social Democratic Party of Germany in what is to be done, which was open to the public and more democratic in organization. But the Russian autocracy prevented this.
Right.
So vanguardism is a strategy whereby the most class-conscious and politically advanced sections of the proletariat.
Right.
Not the bourgeoisie.
Right. This is a class war.
Yeah. A working class described as the revolutionary vanguard form organizations in order to draw larger sections of the working class toward revolutionary politics and serve as manifestations of proletarian political power against its class enemies. You're right, it's a class war. And and this is Trenchant. Our task is in what is to be done, which is before 1903. Our task is not to champion the degrading of the revolutionary to the level of an amateur. And you know, I want to write an essay that says left amateurs. Said, our task is not to champion the degrading of the revolutionary to the level of an amateur, but to raise the amateurs to the level of revolutionaries. So, according to Vladimir Lenin, the purpose of the vanguard party is to establish a dictatorship of the proletariat, which is what Stalin did.
That's exactly right. And that's why they hate him. Boy, do they hate him.
Exactly.
They hate that boy a lot.
Yeah. And we know for people, you know, because dictatorship is a negative word to us, the dictatorship of the proletariat was in contrast to the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie.
Exactly.
They mean no word.
Okay. I mean, we live under a dictatorship of the bourgeoisie that has reach into the lives of more people than ever in human history, and a deeper reach into each of those lives than any regime in the history of the human race. So the word dictatorship is most strongly identified materially in reality with the condition under which we live. So let's not get spooked about that word too much.
Yeah, let's not get spooked about that word because it is a counterattack that is, we want the dictatorship. Sure, we want class power. We want working class power.
Right.
What you have is capitalist dictatorship. So let's think of it in those terms. So Lenin followed Karl Marx because he distinguished between two aspects of revolution. Again, very important, two aspects. A revolution can have an economic campaign, labor strikes for increased wages and work concession, economic campaign, which featured diffused and plural leadership, and a political campaign that is the socialist for socialist changes in society or to society.
Right. You're talking on the one hand, in essence, in the immediate sense of reforms of the existing condition of people, and then in the second of actually revolutionary, in other words, structural changes in the way that people relate to each other going forward. And we're going to have to stop there because we're out of time, and we'll pick it up. This is a good place to pick it up next week. And Luciana, I thank you very much. I'm really enjoying this.
Thank you, Don, and so am I. Thank you very much, and I thank you, and I thank your listeners.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
And so do I. Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.